Session number 27756, Reel 4.
Bill Henrik Smith, Reel 4. When you turned to face your Japanese opponent, was he attacking you? Was he coming towards you from the side?
Or was yes, he was coming towards me as I turned round. And then he turned round and I managed to get behind him. I don't think he was very good. I don't know why. I mean, I wasn't all that good. But I managed to get behind him and I managed to give him a lot of bursts. I gave him quite a couple of minutes bursts, I suppose. And I felt there's quite a few hit, because I wasn't even at an angle, I was behind him, which was very useful. I didn't have to lay anything off. So I think I hit him all right, and he was well and truly hit. And he got back. They did another raid the next day, but we were protectors for the fleet that day. We didn't go on the raid. We were airborne. And they lost a lot of aircraft. And of course, they were waiting for them when they came the second time. Very sad. And some of the friends were shot down. One of my best friends was taken prisoner, and he's one of those fellows that was taken to Singapore. And finally taken out after the war was finished and had his head cut off. They were a nasty lot. I'm sorry, I've no time for Japanese.
Were you aware of that at the time, about your potential fate with the Japanese?
No, I didn't think about it. I wouldn't have gone down on the deck like I did. Because I managed to cross an airfield, I noticed, on the way. I thought, this is rather nice. I never thought about being shot down. It's just as well I didn't. I would have panicked, I should think. But I didn't panic. I wasn't worried at all.
It sounds like you're quite happy with the performance of the aircraft.
Very. Yes, I liked the aircraft. I felt it would keep going. Although it was a bit of a struggle climbing up that mountain when I got to the mountain to get up at that steepish angle.
And it again sounds like you had a sense of isolation when you suddenly found yourself alone in that vastness, in a sense. Is that something that you have to try and overcome and think clearly at that point and try and decide what you want to do?
Oh, yes, you have to. Yeah, I agree. But it didn't enter my head. I didn't think about being shot down. When I read some of the books afterwards, it's been worse since the war than during it.
Were there any facilities for kind of air sea rescue for anybody who would have gone
down? Yeah, there was supposedly a submarine the other side of Java, Sumatra, submarine waiting there, and you were given a point on the island that a submarine will come after 3 weeks or something, in case you can get there. But nobody ever got anywhere. Anyone that shot down was handed over by the locals. They got paid for them. Although we were carrying a great wad of gold sovereigns, I think about 10 or 15 or something, gold sovereigns. I was very wealthy, the wealthiest man I've ever been when I was flying.
At the time, were you aware of how successful the raids had been?
Yes, because we saw the photographs. Saw the photographs on the ship. We realised that and also, of course, we saw the smoke going up when it was there.
You say you saw the photographs. So would photo reconnaissance be? Will that take place from the ship itself?
Yes, yes. I did some photo reconnaissance once, but that was later on.
What happened after the raid? Where were you heading to then?
We went to Fremantle, where they refuelled. Then we went round Australia, and we went, our flight had been told that before we could join the Americans, we had to be able to do night flying from carriers. Nobody had done any night flying from carriers. So two flights of us were sent ashore to Nowra, and the ship went on to Sydney to do night flying. And two flights from Illustrious, they were in Corsairs, of course, not Alcat. So we had four flights there. It was quite a party. We hadn't had beer for a long time, and they had beer there. And New Zealanders, they're great lads for having a drink occasionally. Still, it was very nice.
Why did the Americans... Well, why was there a requirement if you were going to fly with the Americans for night flying?
Because you have to have a flight to come and land on after it's dark. It's got to be up there waiting in case something comes in. It has to land on after dark. You have to have another flight that can go off in the dark and be there waiting for the early morning.
So that would be in the fighter cover role, would it?
That's right.
To do that.
That's right, that's what they were for. Unfortunately, one of our flights later on in the early morning got shot down by one of the British ships as he took off. But there you are, people get slap happy about that. Also at, who was it, King George V, at the Palembang, where the fleet was in, I think somebody put a shell into the Illustrious. You used to worry sometimes coming back, thinking, oh God, what are they going to fire at me?
So once you'd worked up for the night flying in Australia, did you fly back to the Indomitable? Was that...
We flew back on board a fortnight later. Did we have a fortnight? We had a week's leave, I think. A week's leave in Sydney.
What was that like after?
That was all right. We got well spruced up and a nice haircut and everything. And went to the races, which I found was very crooked. I think they knew exactly who was going to win. And then we went and we took our aircraft on board again when she left Sydney. Crikey, what was that?
Thunder.
Oh, was it? We went to... Oh, where'd we go? The islands. Now, names disappear from me again. We went round the end of New Guinea and to these islands here, the Americans had taken them. Oh, dear. No, I can't remember.
So it was actually islands that the Americans had taken?
Yes, they got a big aerodrome on there. And then they had a leave place here where you went ashore and had a drink or something, you see. American ships don't have drink. And we went ashore to the American aerodrome just for a visit and went into the mess. And we were amazed because before you got to your table, there was a row of pills there and you had to take one of each pill. Oh, I don't know what they were for, something or other, but you know what Americans are. You had to take a pill from each dish before you got anything to eat. They had corsairs. They were Marines that were there, American Marines, flying corsairs.
What was your impression of the Corsair? I know, obviously, that you were flying Hellcats, but what did you think of the Corsair?
Well, I did fly a Corsair later on at Yeovilton. The visibility was very poor for deck landing, I would have thought. I didn't deck land it. But it was nice and powerful aircraft and very receptive to all movements. Very receptive it was. The people who flew Corsairs thought they were very good indeed. Very good. But I don't know. I prefer the Hellcat.
Did you get any impressions of the American Marine pilots at all while you were there?
No, I can't remember. What we talked about. We talked, but I can't remember a word that we said.
So where was the next stage? Where did you head to?
Well, we went to Ulithi, which is an atoll, where they were all assembled, 500 million American ships, I think, for the attack on Okinawa. And we were going to Ishigaki Group here to stop them bringing aircraft from Formosa through to Okinawa. That was our plan. And I must admit, we saw the American fleets and things go out for this attack, and they started at dusk, absolute dawn, 100 yards behind one another, and they were still going when it went dark. Hundreds and hundreds of them. And I mean carriers, something like 10 carriers or something there. And all this follow-up carriers, when they had an accident on a ship, they just threw it over the side. Another one came and landed on. Our fellas were taking the bits off and trying to put them together. It really was. It was their war, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's sheer force of numbers did it. I think the Japanese knew they didn't stand an earthly once the Americans got going, because their potential is fantastic. Still, it was very interesting. And then we went out and did patrols over this place here, and then when came out for refueling, then went back in again for another 4 days.
Ah, so there was a designated area that you would return to refuel, yeah, and resupply, was there?
Yeah. And then the next time we went back in, we did an attack on Formosa, whereas they had just been dropping bombs on these Ishigaki. There were three islands there. They all had an aerodrome on, and they were all used for transporting aircraft from one place to another, Japanese aircraft. And our idea was to stop, although the bombs seemed to bomb them each day, the next day when you went, all the holes had been filled in and the aircraft could have landed there just the same.
Would you attack the airfields?
We went down and attacked it with guns, yes, we did.
Can you give me an impression of what it's like to attack an airfield in the Hellcat? You know, what you would see roughly and how much time you would have over.
Well, you try and pick a certain spot, either an aircraft or a shed or a hut or something like that. But I will say that they defended these places, and there was one time. My flight CO, dear, what was his name? Langdon, Sammy Langdon. and I were there, and we were patrolling over to see that there were no aircraft coming. We hadn't been told to attack or anything, but he said, just before we go back to the ship, we'll have a go at something. And we went down, and he went straight in. And that was life number three. They picked on him and not me. And if they don't pick on you, you're all right. But he just went straight in. He was obviously hit pretty rapidly. But you pick one article and go for that, at a steeper angle as possible, because it's, you spread yourself out, you make a bigger target.
What was your kind of opinion of the Japanese anti-aircraft fire? Was it good or poor?
No.
Or?
Well, no. Well, we had this patrol. Another time, we were patrolling off Formosa, four of us. One had to go back. Oh, the head of the patrol had to go back because his radio went off. And we met a whole pile of... Well, I imagined they were suicide dive bombers because they weren't very good. And we had a go with them. And one fellow, one of our chaps, Smithers? Something like that, had been badly hit on the tank and petrol was pouring out. And we told him he'd better go back. So he disappeared. And there were two of us left. Bill, he lives down in the West Country, he's still alive. Can't remember his name now. Anyway, we suddenly another six of these fellas appeared. And we had a real go at them. And I could certainly confirm two for him. And he confirmed one for me, and I think I got another one. I certainly got. They were no good, so they were obviously suicide. I'd just got into the aircraft and flown, and we then went back to the ship after that. This fellow who petrol was coming out, he ran out evidently on the way back, landed on the water and blew up. Died. He should have bailed out, but he didn't, of course. You don't bail out if you think you can land it. But, of course, he was covered with petrol. Covered with petrol. But we were all right. We got back.
Was there a great threat from... Was there a great threat from the kamikaze aircraft at that stage?
Yes, there was a threat from them. There was a threat from them. Our job was to try and... They used to put patrols at 5,000, 10,000 and 15,000 feet and put them out like that. So it so happened that we were the ones that were at the height that these... There were other patrols and other that were very jealous of us getting the job and not the... Why? I don't know, but there you are. You were young and stupid. But we were at 10,000 feet, and we met these kamikaze fellows. At least I'm convinced they were kamikaze. They would have been better pilots if they hadn't.
Did they make any attempt to evade your attacks at all?
Oh, yes, they tried to. Oh, yes, they tried to. But not as though they could have pulled round thickly, and they were obviously afraid of spinning or something or doing something else. Anyway, that was a moment.
Were there any attacks on the carrier? Were there any attacks on the carrier during this period at all from kamikazes?
Yes, there were. One of the carriers got one landed right on, and I think it was our carrier when I wasn't there. I must have been flying. It skidded off the flight deck. So that was useful. And I used to have a photograph, I don't have it now, I don't know where it went, of one just missing the carrier astern of us. Oh, they were always around there. But they'd clobbered a couple of destroyers, I think, well and truly. But there was some rubbish, something was blown back on board from this one that just missed the Dom. And somehow or another they found his priorities. Because Jazz Eccles, the captain, he was a Japanese speaker anyway. And of course the carriers were top. Oh! The carriers were first on the list. So he said. But I think some of them went for smaller fry when they thought they could, couldn't get it a carrier. I don't know.
Was it a tiring time, this patrolling period? Did you find it fatiguing?
Yeah, we're doing 4 hours in a fighter aircraft, which is a long time. Much more than they did in Spitfires. And Spitfire would only stay up for about an hour and a half.
And when you're flying, is it a fatiguing process as well? Because I take it that you will have to be constantly aware of what's going on around you and watching what's happening.
Not terribly. Not terribly fatiguing, no. Not terribly fatiguing, no.
With these operations, how long would you be engaged for during the attacks on Formosa and the atolls? Was it a set period of time before you went into reserve, or was it a continuous action?
No, you'd only be in the action for about a quarter of an hour. But you'd be patrolling for 4 hours in a Hellcat. A Hellcat could carry enough fuel for 4 hours.
Would you use extra fuel tanks at all for the Hellcat?
Yes.
With those, would you jettison them or would you return to the carrier with them?
No, eject them once you'd use them. Get rid of them.
What was the next stage of the operations then after the Okinawa?
Well, we went back to Leyte. And some of us, they said, should be sent home, of which I was one. And we took passage on Fencer, I think it was, to Sydney. And arrived in Sydney on VE Day. The place was dead. Nobody did anything. They weren't interested in VE Day. And we didn't know what to do because we hadn't been allocated. And we were finally taken to a hotel at Bondi where we said we'd have to wait for passage. And we waited 10 days, I think it was, in that hotel in Bondi, till Illustrious came through on her way home because she was having trouble with one of her engines and she was going back to England. So we were all shipped back to England on her, which was quite nice. We had quite a nice time. In fact, in the Med, we stopped in the middle of the Med and jumped over the side for swims. Of course, the war was finished in Europe. And when we got to Gib, the captain had made arrangements for cases of sherry to be available if you could buy them, if you had any money, which you could take back with you. And we went back to Rosyth, round the top, and flew flying off Pennant, which should have caught on the fourth bridge, I think. It was enormous, because Illustrious had been out a long time. Nice ship, Illustrious. Well, of course, it was very similar to Indomitable. And then I was sent to St. Mirren to do a fighter instructor's course, fighter instructor's course. That took 2 months, I think, and then during that 2 months, VJ Day happened. I didn't finish that course till the end of August. And then I was sent to Yeovilton as an instructor. And I was there till January.
46.
January 46 when I got kicked out. Well, I didn't want to stay anyway. I had no intentions then of being a naval officer.
Were you offered the opportunity to stay?
No,
on that
I wasn't.
How had you felt about leaving? Were you happy to leave the fleet at that stage?
I wanted to get back to farming.
Could I ask a little bit of just about the instructor's course? What does that involve, training to be an instructor?
Well, you did a lot of air firing. Exactly what angle you should do it, and that you did a lot of formation flying. And when you went up to with the CO for the final, this was in Spitfires, incidentally, test, you did formation aerobatics, which I didn't take his tail off. I wouldn't know to this day. I really wouldn't. I think he was an idiot to suggest it. But we did. We did rolls and we did a couple of loops. Close stern like that. But that was good training, that, of course. Very good training. Still, there we are.
What was the Spitfire like as an aircraft to fly?
Oh, nice and light. Nice aircraft to fly. Very nice aircraft to fly. Yes, it's a real gentleman's aircraft, that is.
Just one question, really. How do you feel now about having served with the Fleet Air Arm during the Second World War?
How do I feel?
How do you feel about now, about having served with the Fleet Air Arm?
I enjoyed it. I wouldn't have missed it for all the tea in China. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Sad to have to say that, really. And I was very lucky. The average life of a Fleet Air Arm pilot wasn't very great. And I was very lucky. But I did enjoy it.